from deep inside your radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, first of all, thank you to everybody who showed up in Chicago and Seattle this past week for the Christmas shows benefiting the New Orleans Musicians Clinic. Next Sunday's show benefiting the Tipitinas Foundation here in Los Angeles, the show is in Los Angeles, Tipitinas Foundation is in New Orleans, is sold out. It was sold out, I think, before the building was constructed, but there are still tickets for the final three Christmas musicales with Judith Owen and myself in New York at Joe's Pub on the 15th and in New Orleans at the Contemporary Arts Center on the 18th and 19th. So just, and thanks also to the wonderful folks in Richmond, Virginia. WRIR organized a lovely thing a couple weeks ago, and I was lax in thanking them last week, so I thank them today. And also the people in Atlanta at the High Museum. Yes, that's what it's called. And ladies and gentlemen, now that the thank yous have been successfully completed, just a note, just an odd fun fact apropos of the two Grammy nominations that the new Spinal Tap record got this week. Just a fun fact. It's the first nomination of any kind for anything ever connected with the Spinal Tap project. 25 years. The first. The very first. Think of it. Now, stop thinking of it. Ladies and gentlemen, this morning on one of the Sunday Yak shows, not quite in the I dare you not to notice I've said something impossibly ignorant department, but real, real close. General David Petraeus talking about, you know, the new Afghan thing. And asked by Chris Wallace of Fox News whether, since this is a surge, whether in any of the discussions President Obama acknowledged to General Petraeus that the surge had worked in Iraq, because apparently there was a big controversy about that during the election campaign. And General Petraeus, ever the diplomat, or the general, said, well, you know, we've one of the things we did in these meetings the last 3 months is we took the rear view mirrors off the truck. We're just going forward. That's a good way to drive, sir, especially if you get into a dead end. I think at that point, the rearview mirrors would be really convenient. The automotive industry was rocked this week, as you know, by... here's just a sense of the journey we're on. The automotive industry was rocked by the forced resignation of the head of General Motors, Fritz Henderson. I think they thought, you know, people might mistake it for a German car company if they had a guy at the head called Fritz. So, but anyway, the board of directors has moved rapidly now that the company is kind of a ward of you and me, that is to say our government, to change the whole leadership thing. Just Fritz took over just this year. That's the odd part. And, of course, they've got all these new commercials saying, may the best car win. But apparently the best... Well, they're still looking for the best head of the company. The journey, ladies and gentlemen, can be marked by the fact that in the 1950s, the Secretary of Defense in the Eisenhower administration had formerly been head of General Motors. In those days, we got our defense secretaries out of car companies, same thing that happened in the 1960s with Robert McNamara. And that earlier defense secretary, Charlie Wilson, formerly of GM, famously said at one point during his tenure, what's good for General Motors is good for the country. That's how big General Motors was back then. Now, of course, what's good for General Motors may not even be good for General Motors. Hello, welcome to the show.
When you used to rule the streets and the track like a fuel-burning giant, you fought hard so your engines wouldn't be pollution compliant. You and your brother cars prospered by being defiant. And you had such big fun till Obama took the company away. Little GTI. When you had a rotten winter, you're looking at a crappier summer. You're closing down Pontiac, looking hard to dump your Hummer. Bankruptcy buys, being owned by the fans is a bummer. But you had such big fun till Obama took the company away. Little GM, you used to be so big. You were in a hole, and you continued to dig. There's still Caddy Chevy, Buick for Pop. Little GM, rolling to a stop. Wheeling, feeling no with Breslo. Wheeling, dealing, your gaskets are blown. Wheeling, dealing, we still gotta drive. Where we gonna work if you don't survive? When you're shutting down dealers, cleaning it out like a Swiffer. Going 62-0, maybe your mileage will differ. Came in a hot rodder, going out a blue sniffer. But you had such big fun till Obama took the company away. Little GM, shifting down to first. You were never the best. Never the worst. All that's left is a big fire sale. Little GM, you were too big not to fail.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, we did so well the last time we had these military commissions for Guantanamo detainees. You know, we actually convicted Osama's driver. Remember that? Mr. Hamdan? Mr. Hamdan? Speaking of Osama, by the way, BBC quotes a detainee this week as saying, Osama's in Afghanistan. He's not in Pakistan. Yes, they're playing with shells. Anyway, we are resuming the military commissions. There was all this talk about civilian trials for Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and four of his cohorts, but others are being tried by military commissions. They quietly resumed this week. The military court had to grapple with determining where a defendant, Ibrahim Ahmed Mahmoud Al-Khozi, stands under the new military commission's law enacted last October. Under the old law, Khozi and other detainees were called unlawful enemy combatants. But ladies and gentlemen, this is progress. Things are moving forward. Change is in the air. They are now called alien unprivileged enemy belligerents. AUEBs. You see, you feel better already knowing that they're no longer called unlawful enemy combatants, but now alien unprivileged enemy belligerents. Military prosecutors say that terminology is more in line with the Geneva Conventions. More nearly in line, that is to say, not in line. The government wants to amend the charges against Khozi to reflect the new language. His defense attorneys are saying that a new hearing is required, and the judge agreed. So military commissions will be held at Guantanamo past the January closing date. That's not going to be met anyway. The defendant in question... Oh, yeah. His role in the war on terror? He's a Sudanese man accused of acting as a bodyguard and driver for Osama bin Laden. We got both drivers. We got another driver. Man, Osama's going to have to walk if he's going to go from Pakistan to Afghanistan from now on. I'm telling you, nobody will drive that guy. We got another driver, ladies and gentlemen. I am thrilled. More on AFPAC. A senior British military commander said this week roads in Afghanistan were safer when the Taliban ran the country. Major General Nick Carter told the BBC that before the 2001 invasion, women could travel alone in the southern part of Afghanistan. He says, quote, "You could put your daughter on a bus in Kabul, sure in the knowledge that she would get in one piece to Kandahar," unquote. Carter, who just happens to control NATO forces in southern Afghanistan now, says that isn't the case anymore. He says British forces need to change that. They've been there for 8 years. The operation, he says, is shifting its emphasis to ensuring public safety. Forces will now protect the population where they live and ensure freedom of movement on key roads. Because otherwise you'd have to have cops to do that. Oh, it'll be going on. Secretary Gates said today, 3 to 5 years. You know, that deadline is not really a deadline. It's just a deadline, but it's not really a deadline. So 3 to 5 years, which means 3 to 5 centuries. The nuclear front is glowing with news this week because it's clean, cheap, too safe to meter. Nuclear weapons-grade uranium. Oh, I wouldn't worry about that unless it's in Iran. No, it was given up for lost at a plant in Scotland, in Caithness, Scotland, has been found. It was given up for lost, and then it's found. Just nuclear weapons-grade uranium is all. Found during the cleanup at the sprawling site, it was revealed by the Scotsman this week. A team of specialists found 1.5 kilograms. That's not much, is it? Of the highly radioactive material over the past year during an operation to repackage waste at the site. See? If you're in high school now, I hope your career counselor is talking to you about nuclear waste repackager as a career. Some of the material was found in drums filled with waste, and other small particles were found in the nooks and crannies of previously inaccessible equipment. They had to wait for new tools to be developed to access the nooks? I don't know. I really don't. 3 years ago, an official government report in Scotland revealed that 238 grams of highly enriched uranium, the material used to make nuclear weapons, was unaccounted for at the Caithness nuclear facility. So out of that, out of 238 grams, they've found 1.5 kilograms, ladies and gentlemen. Break out the champagne. And federal auditors in this country say this week it would be cheaper to store nuclear waste in concrete casks right at the nation's nuclear plants, right there where the stuff is made, than at Nevada's Yucca Mountain, at least in the short term. And of course, since this stuff has to be kept safe for about 100,000 years, short-term thinking is what we need. In the long run, relying on the casks could turn out to be more expensive. The GAO, the Government Accountability Office, estimates the cost of maintaining radioactive waste at the nation's nuclear plants for 100 years at between $13 and $34 billion. There's some wiggle room there, don't you think? You could fit right in there. With that, the projected cost of storing a similar amount of nuclear waste at Yucca Mountain would range from $41 to $67 billion. Well, that's more. How much nuclear waste do we have right now? This would be high level nuclear waste, I guess. 70,000 metric tons, enough to fill a football field more than 15 feet deep. Well, why do we do that? Why don't we just pick a football field? And how are the Packers doing these days? The material is accumulating at 80 sites. Congress approved legislation in 2002. Saying Yucca Mountain was the place to dump it, but somehow the people in Nevada didn't quite dig that. Would disrupt the gambling, you know, to see the glow on the horizon. Most of the cost for Yucca Mountain would occur up front. The cost associated with storage on site at the nuclear plants would be backloaded. Well, we know how this is going to happen. Those costs don't occur for 80 years. Let's do that. Because it's no problem, ladies and gentlemen. It's clean, safe, too cheap to meter. I just pity those people who have to deal with it 100 years from now. They're gonna be saying really nice stuff about us. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Who cares what they'll say? We'll be dead. Pete Doherty. He's a musician, has apologized to fans and Germans alike. I'm reading this. This is the way Rolling Stone wrote it. After the former Libertines frontman sang the controversial first verse of the German national anthem during a concert in Munich. Last month, the crowd loudly booed Doherty after he included the verse, Deutschland, Deutschland, über alles, you know what that translates to, in a rendition of Hit the Road, Jack. Because of its connection to the Third Reich, Germans have disregarded the verse since World War II. To make matters worse, the performance was broadcast live on Bavarian radio. In a statement, Doherty said that he just wanted to celebrate his appearance in Munich by assimilating and integrating with the crowd. He was removed from the stage five songs later and allowed to assimilate backstage. Doherty's spokesman said the guitarist was unaware of the controversy surrounding the verse. Doherty deeply apologizes if he has caused any offense, the spokesperson said. Pete himself is from Jewish descent and has fought against racism and fascism with numerous organizations. This is a subject he feels very strongly about, unquote the statement. Although this isn't the first time Doherty has attracted controversy by referencing Nazi Germany musically, on the Libertines' self-titled second album, Doherty wrote a song called Arbeit macht frei, or Work Brings Freedom, the slogan that was featured at the entrances of Nazi concentration camps during World War II. Because he's part... Dateline Tokyo, for politicians in Japan, the road to scandal usually winds through construction companies, defense contractors, or a mistress. For newly elected Prime Minister Yukio Hatoyama, the road leads to his mother, an octogenarian heiress. Prosecutors have traced about $10 million that Yasuko Hatoyama, 87 years old, gave to her son over a five-year period ending last year. Some of the money was reportedly funneled into fake campaign donations, listed as coming from dead people or from people who never contributed. Hatoyama apologized this week in Parliament for the donation scandal, suggesting he will remain prime minister unless he's prosecuted. See, this is what happens when you don't call your mother often enough. This stuff happens. A Swiss politician has apologized for calling for a ban on Jewish and Muslim cemeteries 2 days after the country voted to outlaw minarets on mosques. I'm sorry, I didn't mean it like that, said Christopher Darbele, president of the Christian Democratic People's Party of Switzerland. It was about the principle that we all belong to the same Swiss society. In his call for the ban, Darbele said, I don't imagine that in this country every religion or sect can have a separate cemetery in every town. Darbele has also called for a ban on burqas or veils worn by some Muslim women. But not a ban on any veils worn by men. Oh, I see, because they... Dateline London, the British sailors freed after a week in Iranian custody apologized to their families Friday as they were reunited for the first time since their detention November 25th. The five men were apprehended by the Iranian Navy as their racing yacht traveled from Bahrain to Dubai for a competition. Well, in the meantime, you know what happened to Dubai. Bye-bye! Iranian authorities said they released the men Wednesday after determining they'd accidentally wandered into the country's waters. The sailors told relatives their boat had become disabled and hard to steer. Why they apologized. The U.S. Preventive Services Task Force this week appeared before Congress to acknowledge their mammogram recommendations were poorly communicated. The task force communication was poor, said Dr. Diana Petiti, the vice chairwoman. The task force is saying the screening starting at 40 should not be automatic, nor should they be denied. Many doctors and many women will decide to have mammography screening starting at age 40. The task force did not retract the recommendations, nor did they explain why those guidelines were established with no radiologist on the committee. They did, however, admit their timing in the middle of a heated debate on health reform was not optimal, and that they are not smooth talkers. The task force acknowledges that the language used did not say what the task force meant to say. Petiti added they're committed to improving their communication and that they're sorry for not talk good. If you got an early morning robocall this week, courtesy of R.J. Harris, a challenger to the incumbent Representative Tom Cole for Oklahoma's 4th District, you were one of about 3,000 residents of Norman, Oklahoma. The calls started going out at 6 a.m. from the automated calling service RoboTalker. Let's all buy stock in them. Obviously, that wasn't supposed to happen, said R.J. Harris, the candidate. It was a software malfunction, and we apologize to anybody who was called. About 20,000 area residents were supposed to have been called at 6 p.m. A software malfunction started the calls 12 hours early. His campaign alerted RoboTalker and stopped the calls before the entire list was contracted. James Rosendahl apologized for helping to link Detroit and corruption in the national consciousness. Rosendahl was talking to a federal judge at the conclusion of his trial on a bribery scandal. He was sentenced to 11 months in federal prison, ordered to pay a $200,000 fine for helping to bribe Detroit officials to win approval for a sludge disposal deal. Words cannot adequately convey the sorrow and regret I feel for what I did. My zeal and selfish acts caused a lot of harm, said Rosendahl, who faced up to 5 years in prison but won leniency by cooperating with the feds. Said the judge, simply put, you corrupted the process of contracting in Detroit. He's the guy. CNN has apologized to the Irish Times for alleging that that newspaper carried fake nude photographs of Ellen Nordgren, Tiger Woods' wife. CNN apologized for printing a story on its website that incorrectly accused the Irish Times of printing those photographs. The channel mixed up the Irish Times with another Irish publication, The Dubliner magazine, which did fake photos of Ellen Woods nude and later apologized and paid a hefty fine. Well, the Irish Times and The Dubliner, you know, they sound so much alike because they both sound like Ireland. MSNBC's Chris Matthews apologized this week for saying that Barack Obama had traveled to an enemy camp at West Point to address the nation on the war. He made the remark Tuesday night during on-air analysis of the speech, saying he saw skepticism and little enthusiasm in the faces of cadets and officers at West Point. He said on his show Wednesday he'd got some very tough calls from former cadets and parents of cadets who told him the audience are trained not to show the kind of emotion that he thought was lacking. Interesting that the analysis after the speech included no persons who were experts on the history of Afghanistan and Pakistan. Because why would we want to know that stuff? Dateline Bratislava. The Czech government this week made a public statement of regret that what we used to call gypsy women, we would now say Roma, were sterilized in the past without their full consent and said safeguards had been drawn up to make sure nothing similar happens in the future. Rights groups claim that from the 1970s till 1990, Romani women were systematically sterilized under a Czechoslovak government program aimed at reducing the high unhealthy birth rate of Romani women. Czech officials have apologized, but rights groups say Slovak politicians have not dealt with the issue. Of course, that used to be one country, now it's two. The British security company that started a firestorm after claiming recent Windows security updates caused a widespread black screen lockout of users' computers has retracted its claims and publicly apologized to Microsoft. Think of that. It's clear our original blog post has been taken out of context and may have caused an inconvenience for Microsoft, said Mel Morris, the chief executive of the firm. This was never our intention, and we have already apologized to Microsoft. That was the second apology in 2 days. On a blog post. The first was written by Jacques Erasmus, the same company's director of research, saying that Microsoft patches were not to blame. Instead, the responsibility for the black screens were malware infections. And, of course, Microsoft isn't responsible for those. Their computers are just easily infected, that's all. But not as easily as they were. Finally, in the apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, I have let my family down, and I regret those transgressions with all my heart. So began the headline, the post on Tiger Woods' website that ran with the headline, Tiger comments on current events. Gee, I wonder what he thinks about the war. Not those events. I've not been true to my values, his statement continues, and the behavior my family deserves. I'm not without faults, and I am far short of perfect. He wants more privacy. Several paragraphs about that. Whatever regrets I have about letting my family down have been shared with and felt by us alone. For all those who've supported me over the years, I offer my profound apology. Now, get out of my way. I have to take this car to the dealership to repair the window. No, he didn't say that, but you know he is. Tiger Woods, ladies and gentlemen, concluding the apologies of the week, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Love.
This is Le Show, and now...
He's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an inspector general.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, news from the inspectors general, and basically dealing with our safety. You know, our security in the... Somebody doesn't have the post-9/11 mindset, I'm thinking. The Transportation Security Administration has not effectively assured the security of air cargo while it's being handled by personnel on the ground, that's all. Aside from that, everything... Keep flying! Come on, what's your problem? This according to the Department of Homeland Security's Inspector General. An audit found that air carrier employees were handling and transporting air cargo. You know... Stuff that flies on planes with us? Without background checks or training is all, you see. Without background checks or training is what I'm saying. Is what the Inspector General is saying. Of more than 2,640 air cargo security violations that TSA cargo inspectors found over the last year and a half, 1,655, or about two-thirds, were violations of security training and testing requirements. And TSA's Office of Intelligence reported in June of last year that the transportation sector was the most vulnerable to terrorist attack, aviation targets were the highest priority. Despite identifying and reporting similar vulnerabilities, TSA's inspection process has not effectively ensured improved compliance and awareness of TSA's own requirements, said the IG. The reporter recommended that TSA tighten access control at air cargo facilities, improve threat assessment, provide more specific training and testing requirements, encourage inspectors to take a risk-based approach to security, and train inspectors to improve the use of available security data. Sounds like the whole thing. They're recommending, how about doing your job, babe? How about it? Meanwhile, U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano said her department is unable to meet a terrorism security mandate, a 2012 deadline for checking all ship cargo bound for the United States for WMD materials. She blames insufficient technology and high cost, high expense associated with scanning 10 million cargo containers that enter the country annually. So she's asking for an extension of the congressionally imposed deadline. So much for deadlines, you might say. Might make you think about Afghanistan. Anyway, no, coming back to this. To meet the 2012 deadline, Napolitano said cost would increase to a minimum of $168 billion for monitoring the country's 21,000 inbound shipping routes. The 100% scanning requirement of all cargo was intended to assure that no chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons could be brought in the U.S. port system, which many analysts consider a security vulnerability. But come on, go ahead, keep flying. It's all right. Expanding screening with available technology would slow the flow of commerce and drive up costs to consumers without bringing significant security benefits, Napolitano says. She says a less comprehensive measure would focus only on incoming containers at a small fraction of the more than 700 ports connected to this country. A large majority of imported cargo comes from only 58 of those 700 ports. Okay, how are they doing with that? The Government Accountability Office says that Homeland Security's Customs and Border Protection outfit has failed to conduct a feasibility analysis of expanding 100% security scanning of foreign ports. They've been able to scan a majority of U.S.-bound cargo containers at the ports that have relatively low volume. They have not achieved sustained scanning rates above 5% at the ports where most of the cargo comes to the United States. Good work, everybody. Good work, everybody. Makes you proud to be a whatever you are. The News of Inspectors General, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. But, you know, you still have to take off your... Don't think you don't have to take off your shoes, because that is the bulwark. That right there is the thin leather line. So, yes, a lot of media attention being devoted to Tiger Woods. A lot of controversy. Tiger wants his privacy. But, of course, he's not just a golfer. He's become an advertising icon. And a lot of companies this week announced they were standing by him, at least in the short term, of course. You know, companies think long term. There's, you know, to the end of the quarter. And so that may change. But right now, the only thing that we see on the horizon is Nike coming out with an altered, amended, new and improved version of the very first commercial they ever did with Tiger Woods.
I'm Tiger Woods.
I'm Tiger Woods.
I'm Tiger Woods.
Hey, it's Tiger. I need you to do me a huge favor. Can you please take your name off your phone? My wife went through my phone and may be calling you.
I'm Tiger Woods.
I'm Tiger Woods.
So if you can, please take your name off that.
I'm Tiger Woods.
I am Tiger Woods.
And,
I am Tiger Woods.
What do you call it? Just have it as a number on the voicemail.
I'm Tiger Woods.
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 Just have it as your telephone number. That's it. Okay, you gotta do this for me. Huge. Quickly. Bye. Bye.
Rising up, back on the street. I did my time, I took my chances. in the distance. Now I'm back on my feet, just a woman and her will to survive. It's the eye of the tiger, the thrill of the fight. I'm rising up to the challenge of a rival, and the last known survivor stalks his prey in the night, and he's watching us all with the eye of the tiger. So many times it happens to fathers. You trade a young passion for your glory. Don't lose your grip on the dreams of the past. You must fight just to keep them alive. It's the eye of the tiger, the thrill of the fight. Rising up to the challenge of a rival, and the last known survivor stalks his prey in the night, and he's watching us all with the eye of the street. I took my time, I took my chances. In the distance, now I'm back on my feet, just a woman and her will to survive. It's the eye of the tiger, the thrill of the fight. I'm rising up to the challenge of a rival, and the last known survivor stalks his prey in the night, and he's watching us all with the eye of the tiger.
Ladies and gentlemen, this week Dick Cheney gave another interview criticizing the Obama administration, of all things. This one was to the online magazine Politico. He's also been on Fox News with Sean Hannity, and I think on Fox News Sunday, I don't know. Anyway, he says Cheney's increasingly persuaded by the notion that Obama doesn't believe in American exceptionalism, the idea that the United States is a special nation, the greatest, freest nation mankind has ever known. When I see the way he operates, I'm increasingly convinced that he's not as committed to or wedded to that concept as most of the presidents I've known, Republican or Democrat. And I'm worried. And I find as I get out around the country, and you know he does a lot of that, I saw him at the Costco. Just a lot of other people are worried, too. He criticized the president for projecting weakness. Of course, the Bush administration was very good at projecting strength. It was a projection, but it looked convincing. Anyway, as I say, he's been on Fox News. He's been on certain conservative radio broadcasts. One notably he hasn't been on recently. No way to know if that's a concern to him unless one were to dig deep, deep down underground.
Next, intimate tales of America's former underground vice president, the action-packed diary of the man who was just a heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney,
Confidential.
Far be it from me to try to elicit sympathy from my own diary, but nothing is harder for an intensely private man and going public. It's like executing a reverse Tiger Woods. So even though the enemies of freedom, the admirers of all things French, might think I was having a high old time giving interviews to every radio program that's got even one G. Gordon Liddy Gold commercial placed in it, it's been a hard path for me. Yeah, the town cars have been comfortable. The spring water in the green rooms has been admirably cold, and despite the evident disdain the current administration has for anything resembling security, the Secret Service has been appropriately deployed. And yet there's been a gnawing sense of unhelpfulness about the whole Operation Stay on Offense enterprise. Maybe it's unease that the only folks to speak up in public for the idea of American exceptionalism have been Sarah Palin and myself. No, nothing against the divine Miss P, but you'd think more conservatives would pipe up for the notion that this nation is unlike any other, freer, greater, just damn better. Sure, we've applied a round or two of genocidal techniques and experienced an unpleasant civil war, but that doesn't make us just a bigger Belgium. I don't know, maybe my fellow conservatives have started to believe that the good Lord includes every two-bit member of the United Nations in his global plan. But it sure is lonely out there. And of course there is the little matter of certain shows, which at one time might have seemed appropriate platforms for me, shows that fit me better than Toreador pants fit a starlet. Now those shows have been showing me a door just a little bit less than open. So while Lynn was out shopping for my surprise Christmas gift from the spy shop, I was paying a little unplanned visit to the Palm Beach home of the one talk show host who'd been avoiding me like I was the swine flu poster boy. Thursday, 3:17 p.m.
All right, Mr. Snurdly, see you tomorrow. Whew. Boy, broadcast excellence sure takes a lot out of a man.
No reason you have to shoulder that burden alone, Rush. That's what guests are for.
Well, Mr. Vice President, what an unexpectedly pleasant surprise. I mean, it's surprising, so it is by definition unexpected, and it is pleasant, although normally people don't get this close to the golden microphone without being cleared through.
Let's just say I pulled a Salahi.
Well, I hope you're at least taking aspirin for it, Mr. Vice President. So, what brings you to the Palace of Perspicacity, my friend, and can I get you somebody who can get you something?
No, I'm fine, Rush. Nothing wrong. I'm interviewed by Politico magazine whenever I like. Blanquita Cullum has me on her conservative talk show if I so much as have my representative say boo to her. What could I possibly need?
Sir, your sarcasm is in as fine a shape as ever, but my hearing isn't. What am I missing here?
Oh, I don't know, Rush. Just seems it's been a long time since I allowed you to talk me into being on your little program.
Well, sir, we've de-emphasized the guesting aspect of the broadcast since it was taking valuable airtime away from the host. I'm sure you can understand that. After all, the $2,000 personally autographed gold humidors aren't being sold on the Dick Cheney merchandise site, sir. Now, nor should they be. Mm-hmm. Still, they're not going to fly off the shelves by themselves. A minute you don't hear my voice is a minute you're not wishing you could have something bearing my name in your home. It's business, Mr. Vice President, and I know we both love the hell out of that.
Here's the kind of business I have considerable affection for.
Oh, that was a Babylonian spittoon from Saddam's palace. One of a kind.
250 of a kind. We had the Navy SEALs cranking them out for our special friends.
Uh-huh.
Look, Mr. Limbaugh, I don't like to tell you how to run your operation, but I need to have access to your operation for my operation to achieve its goals, operationally.
Mm-hmm.
We certainly had a mutually advantageous arrangement back when you were begging me to come on your show.
A lot has changed since then, Mr. Vice President.
I assume you're referring to the unfortunate happenstance that I'm no longer the Vice President.
Well, there is that. In fact, that's all there is. Look, Mr. Vice President, Sean Hannity loves having you on his show. He's told me that personally.
Mm-hmm.
I know Michael Savage would, you know, change his name back to Wiener to have you on his show. You're doing fine. You're getting your message out there. You don't need Mount Rushmore?
Rush wouldn't be here if I didn't have to be. Not that kind of guy. Mm-hmm. To be effective, our projection of strength has to be ubiquitous, just like our Iraq branding was. You know that as well as I do.
Sir, I wouldn't say this in any other circumstance but this one, given the knife you're fingering, but mm-hmm. your job, and you're doing it exceedingly well, is defending the past. My job, and I do it sublimely, is to lay the groundwork for the future. There was a time, sir, when I would have begged to have Bob Dole on my program. Now, if I'm going to have any guests at all, and I think that is, as I say, doubtful, it's less likely to be you, mm-hmm. Mr. Vice President, mm-hmm. and more likely to be Zach Womp.
I want to talk to your housekeeper. Seems to be a knife stuck in your wall.
Mm-hmm.
Now listen here, my friend. There's still some Republicans in the FCC. I think you're perspicacious enough to realize they don't necessarily owe their primary loyalty to George W. Bush.
Sir, you used to have better staff work. They have no jurisdiction over syndicated programming like mine.
And there are still some folks at the FDA who've got access to some very high-grade oxycodone.
You know what, Mr. Vice President? I'm supposed to be autographing humidors. I'd love it if, by the time I'm through, you've spared my security team the trouble of having to escort you from the premises. I'll tell Sean Hannity you said hello.
I don't think our loquacious friend will be quite as verbose when he gets subpoenaed to that FCC hearing. The security finds all that oxycodone on him. But that's just me. End of partial diary for early December 2009. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential. Thank you.
só danço samba, só danço samba. Só danço samba, vai. Já dancei o twist até demais, mas não sei, me cansei do calypso ao tchá-tchá-tchá.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. First, this should be this should ring bells with both Tiger Woods and the Salahis. Queen Elizabeth and Prince Charles have instructed a senior lawyer specializing in privacy and media law to mastermind a new privacy strategy. The new Get Tough approach has the full support of Prince Charles, Prince William, Prince Harry, and other senior members of the royal family, who are now prepared to take legal action against what they see as, quote, the intrusive and unacceptable behavior, unquote, of paparazzi. New strategies likely to be tested later this month when the Queen, accompanied by other members of the royal family, enjoys her traditional Christmas break at her Norfolk estate, Sandringham. Several freelance reporters usually spend many hours a day, sorry, photographers usually spend many hours a day, touring Sandringham in the hope of snatching photographs of the royal family on the estate. However, senior aides at the palace have told the Sunday Telegraph they will no longer tolerate photographers using telephoto lenses to capture pictures of the royal family in private situations. Who do they work for, by the way? The royal family? Who pays their salary and expenses and everything? I forget. Week two of the Chilcot inquiry into the roots of the Iraq war, since they haven't taken the rear-view mirrors off the truck over there yet. British attempts to persuade the U.S. to plan for the consequences of an invasion of Iraq founded on a blind spot in Washington, where senior officials thought, quote, everyone would be grateful and there would be dancing in the streets, unquote. There was a, quote, touching belief in Washington that we shouldn't worry so much about the aftermath because it was all going to be sweetness and light, unquote, Edward Chaplin, head of the Middle East Department of the British Foreign Office at the time. It was assumed that all would be well, he said, especially if power was handed over to an exiled opposition spokesman, such as Ahmad Chalabi. Quote, we said to the Americans, they had very little credibility in Iraq. Americans didn't listen, apparently. Chaplin and Sir Peter Ricketts, then political director of the Foreign Office, said they were dismayed by the way the Bush administration failed to take the issue of post-invasion affairs seriously. Several figures in the British government said the failure to draw up a proper plan to protect the civilian population after the occupation was a prima facie breach of the Geneva Conventions. Those Brits, they're so quaint. But there's more. Sir David Manning said he was Tony Blair's former foreign policy advisor, had a withering view of the Americans. Post-war planning, quote, the assumption that the Americans would have a coherent plan which would be implemented after the war obviously proved to be unfounded. Ricketts said the Office of Reconstruction, Sir Peter Ricketts, man in charge of the Foreign Office's Iraq effort, said the Office of Reconstruction and Humanitarian Assistance set up by the U.S. was, quote, a shambles. The former head of Britain's armed forces, Lord Boyce, said there was dysfunctionalism among the State Department, the Pentagon, and the White House. When U.S. forces were advancing on Baghdad way back in March 2003, Lloyd Boyce said he was extremely concerned about the, quote, anorexic nature of the American contribution. There were too few troops on the ground, he said. The Americans made it clear they were in Iraq, quote, to do the war fighting, not the peacekeeping, unquote. Britain committed a large land force to the invasion of Iraq in an attempt to buy influence with the United States, according to Lieutenant General Sir Anthony Pigott, who was Deputy Chief of the Defense Staff. By taking on a major military role, the U.K. was to show the Americans that it was a, quote, serious player. And Dominic Asquith, Director for Iraq at the Foreign Office, Now, later, Ambassador to Baghdad told the Inquiry the Treasury refused to release extra funding for reconstructions in Basra, where British forces were based. The direction was this was a high priority, but we weren't being given the extra resources to deliver. It was left to the Prime Minister's cabinet departments to put the case to Treasury for resources to cover this, to which the answer was, there are no resources. And, looking forward into the mirror, tensions between Britain and America over the war in Afghanistan erupted into the open. The new, current Defense Secretary of Britain said you can't put a time on the presence of Western troops in Afghanistan. You've got to look at conditions. He said the public would not tolerate the war going on forever, but insisted there is no deadline for withdrawal. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Does he know something we don't? Has he heard a different speech? Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415 megahertz, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet, at two different locations on your computer, live and archived, whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available for your smartphone at stitcher.com, available as a free download at audible.com/leshow, and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it would be just like having all the mirrors on the truck if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Hawaii, and Chicago in exile desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. The email address for this broadcast and playlists of the music heard hereon, just part of the electronic digital extravaganza, yours for the clicking at harryshearer.com. The new Glimmers of Hope video is up at mydamnchannel.com. And I'm yakking at you all week through Twitter at letwits.com. No, at letwits at Twitter. Help me get 10,000 followers, won't you? Like, that matters. The show comes to you from Century Progress Production Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.